Dear friends, good evening. Thank you so much for joining us once again in another week for another Gnostic Lab of Practical Application. And tonight, we would like to share with you the practice of Dream Yoga. Now, evidently, it is Dream Yoga. We're not going to be able to do the whole practice. But what we would like to do is give you all of the existing pointers and good rules that we can share with you, so that you can make the most out of your Dream Yoga experience. Dream Yoga is certainly very fruitful. And what we are referring to here is not just the Dream Yoga. We're speaking here about a practice that is superior in nature, and that it is known as Tantric Dream Yoga. Now, when we hear this word tantric, many of us tend to make an immediate association with tantrism and sexuality, of course, because of the influence of the bombardment that we get through the internet about all of these things associated with the Anangaranga and the Kama Sutra and all this other stuff. And we have to expand our understanding of all of these concepts. Whenever we are referring about a tantric practice, we are saying that this is a ritual exercise. This is a ritualistic practice. And we have to make of the process of going to sleep a ritual. And we do that because every time that we allow the physical body to go to sleep, the lunar astral body that we carry within naturally unfolds, and every single night when your body is sleeping, you are going through an astral experience. Now, it is true that sometimes you may remember your dreams and other times you may not. Most people, they don't remember their dreams at all. But that does not mean that the astral experience is not happening. And if it is taking place naturally, well, we might as well make of this a conscious exercise. So what we would like to do is share with you this system, this series of little arrangements, small changes, good practices that you can implement in your daily life with minimal effort, but that they have a tremendous amount of payback. Because notice that we are referring to this as Dream Yoga. And of course, this has nothing to do with postures or with any specific breathing technique or the twisting of the tongue. It is certainly none of that. Here, this is a ritual on reuniting. Because that is exactly what yoga means. Yoga comes from a Sanskrit root word, yug, which means to reunite. So this is a ritual practice in which we are seeking to reunite with our innermost through the process of the dream of the physical body. So the physical body goes to sleep, the lunar astral body naturally unfolds, and we are seeking to make those experiences conscious. Now Samael tells us, all of those candidates who are sincerely longing for a mystical direct experience, they must begin with the discipline of the Dream Yoga. And he says, students, you have to be very demanding with yourself. You have to learn to create favorable conditions so that you can remember and you can understand all of those inner experiences that are happening on a consistent, continual, and constant basis while you are sleeping. And Samael starts. And he says, the first thing that you need to do before you retire to your bed at the end of your day, he says, it is always very useful if you live a life that is fairly sedentary. You know, if you spend a lot of time sitting, more so these days that we are working from home because of these coronavirus conditions. If you happen to be at home because for one reason or another, you're not exercising the body enough. Samael says, it is advisable for you to, number one, pay attention to the state that you are in. And not only we need to understand what is our emotional state. Understanding our emotional state gives us a clear indication on which psychological aggregates exist behind our thoughts. Because thoughts always precede emotions. See, thoughts happen because of emotions, and they go into a vicious cycle that the emotion then conditions the thinking. So we have to make ourselves aware of that. That way, as we are going to sleep, if we have thoughts of this or thoughts of that, we will have a better feel if these are thoughts that are associated with our ambitions or with our fears. If they are related to our resentments, or if they are related to our greeds or our envies, maybe our jealousies. He also says, if you live a life that is sedentary, you spend a lot of time at home and you just don't move too much, it is always a good idea to walk outside at night. Just go outside. Enjoy the calmness of the night. Take a brisk walk. As you're doing this, you move that blood in our in that body. You excite the body just a little bit to be able to break that tamasic force, that inertia that has been encumbering your body. And with that, you create a really good condition for the body to simply lay down comfortably and naturally have a good night's sleep. When it comes to our last meal at the end of the day, the recommendation that Samael gives us is to make sure that our last meal is a light meal, and that is free of heavy or stimulating foods. If you have a nice fruit salad with some good nuts and honey, if you combine citric fruit, nuts, and honey, that becomes beautiful nourishment for your brain, and it allows you to start strengthening your ability to remember. That is certainly useful. If you have a good salad, that is always a light meal that is not only nourishing and satisfies the needs of your body, but allows your body just to go rest and not try to deal with the regeneration of the body and also with the digestion of that mass of food that you have just dumped in your stomach. But there's also something else behind this. And it is that when we go to sleep after a heavy meal, you know, if you give yourself one of those massive steaks and a big potato, and you load yourself with starches and that heavy tissue with protein, and on top of that you throw heavy creams into it, the effort of the body to digest that is so strong that the body needs a substantial amount of energy to exercise that digestion. And as that is happening, the body will naturally open a series of magnetic centers in the lower abdomen. Those magnetic centers, we tend to know them with the name of chakras. And when those chakras in the lower abdomen open, then it becomes a lot easier for us when our lunar astral body unfolds, rather than remaining within that realm of the astral plane, it descends into the vestibule of hell. And then we have those nightmares. Now let's not confuse a bad dream with a nightmare. Because bad dreams, you know, we can have a bad dream in which we see ourselves losing our teeth, or we can see ourselves just crying or walking barefoot on a rocky path. You know, we could see those dreams and we could think that those are nightmares. But in reality, those are what people will in general consider bad dreams, even though there's a tremendous amount of teaching behind them. A nightmare is very distinguishable because whenever you descend into that vestibule of hell, you walk into a realm that is governed by 96 laws. Not the 48 that we have here in this third dimension, but 96. And if you are experiencing a nightmare, meaning that you have descended into that vestibule, it is likely that you will find yourself trying to fight some creature And when you try to move your arms to fight, your arms are just too heavy and you can't move them. It causes a tremendous amount of panic and desperation. It is likely that if you're trying to run in that dream, your feet, they feel like they're made of cement and you can barely lift them, and it is very difficult for you to run. If you try to scream, you open your mouth and you push that air, but nothing comes out. That's when you know that you are in a nightmare. Because once those other laws come into place, they add into the mechanicity. They make those motions very difficult. And that happens very typically every time that you just go to bed with a full stomach. When you have loaded yourself with all of that stuff, and then it is difficult for your physical body to be able to digest that. So when it comes to supper, it is just better for the body in general. It is even better for your diet. Feed yourself with something light, fruit, nuts, and honey, particularly citric fruit. That is great nourishment for the brain because it allows you to retrieve memories. It improves your memory capacity. And salads and vegetables, they're certainly always good for the body at any time of the day, but certainly great before going to bed. Now, notice that as we start going down the list, we have this thing here called the most elevated way of thinking, dot, dot, dot. In many lectures, Samael speaks that the highest way of thinking is not thinking. And this is something that we really have to comprehend. This is not evident for everybody. Because it is true that we have to disconnect ourselves from the dualistic aspect of the mind. The mind does not know to do anything else other than compare. And it will compare based on your conditioning. It would always make a comparison looking for the alternative that would bring you the least amount of suffering. It is not looking for the highest degree of happiness. It is looking for whatever would give you the least amount of suffering, because there is always a psychological aggregate of fear that is always in the sideline. If this were a sport, we would have one of the worst coaches ever, because the sideline psychological aggregate of fear is always telling you, be careful, be watchful, don't do this, that's going to go bad for you, until there's a stronger aggregate that bumps him out and furthers the illogical thinking. Like those aggregates of, for example, lust, that they know nothing about family commitments and finances and responsibilities of work. And when lust takes over, people do the most horrendous things, and they don't even think about the consequences, you see? But anyway, as we are having this conversation about the highest way of thinking, for us to be able to disconnect from this dualistic thinking process of the mind, we have to start developing faculties that are faculties of the consciousness and that manifest themselves through the heart. You see, it's imagination, inspiration, and intuition. Because imagination allows us to see the thing itself. Imagination, when it is of an objective nature, when it is conscious imagination, the same thing that other people refer to as clairvoyance, that objective imagination gives us the ability to see the thing and not get dissuaded with the appearance of the thing itself. That is certainly useful. Now, when it comes to inspiration allows us to grasp the significance of the thing, the reason behind the thing. And this is something that the consciousness is able to grasp, to apprehend in a way that is instinctive. It is part of the instinctive ability of the consciousness to comprehend the cosmic truths. So when we have objective imagination and we can see the thing itself, that doesn't require thinking. That does not require analysis. When we can rely on the faculty of the consciousness of inspiration, we can apprehend the significance and the reason for the thing, and we just know it immediately. That is intuition. We intuitively know it immediately. And inspiration gives us the spiritual reality of the thing itself. So with the objective imagination, we see it. With the intuition, we immediately know the reason and the significance of it. And with the inspiration, we know the spiritual reality behind that thing. That is something marvelous. Because what this is saying, that when these three things come together, in a fraction of an instant, you know what you need to know about that thing. When we work on developing those faculties, on giving the consciousness that liberty to practice what it does best, we can start going beyond the thinking process that is just governed and conditioned by the ego. But let us be very clear with this. For us to be able to transition into the most elevated way of thinking, which is not thinking, we need to also develop the ability to learn how to think. And Samael tells us very clearly, the way that you learn how to think is by questioning, inquiring, analyzing, reflecting. Question, analyze, inquire, reflect. And we have to do these so that we can bring about our own experience that is gnosis itself, and that we can then put that on a scale and weight it against our ideas, our dogmas, our theories, and the stuff that many other people say. So we need to have a good foundation on logical thinking. We need to develop the basics of thinking. Because it is not enough to say, I don't want to think anymore. And then even lose the ability to distinguish between opposites simply because we just want to call it all the same. This is very important. Let's develop our ability to think, but to think in a way that is superior. We inquire, we question, we analyze, and we reflect. That allows us to weigh what we are hearing, what we have read, what we have carried within our memory housing group for many years, and just weigh that against our experience. And as we extenuate that, we can demonstrate that we have a good way to exercise that logical superior thinking. We can then start transitioning into developing those faculties of the consciousness. But ultimately, what we're looking is for the most elevated way of thinking. And that happens. That most elevated way of thinking. That opportunity for the consciousness to be able to see, to know spiritual reality, to understand the reason and the significance, all in an instant, that happens when the mind is quiet, when the mind is silent, when we are no longer stuck in the event that happened early in the morning or a few days ago, when we are no longer concerned about what other people are thinking of us. We can bring that level of serenity into the mind, even if it is just for a brief moment. We give an opportunity to the consciousness to be able to exercise its instinctive abilities. And a world of truth is revealed to us. To complement that most elevated way of thinking, we know that we have some basic cylinders in the human machine. You guys would remember this from all of the other lectures. You know, the sexual center, the motor, the instinctive, the intellectual, the emotional. We know that the intellectual one is in the head. We know that the emotional one is here three fingers above the navel. We know that the sexual center is, of course, in our sexual organs. And we know that the motor one is here at the base of the brain. And of course, the instinctive is at the bottom of the spine. We know these things very well. But we have two other superior centers. One is a superior intellectual that is, of course, in the head. and we have a superior emotional center that happens to be also in the head. And we can nourish that superior emotional center. And that center is nourished not only with love and compassion, but also with the power of sound. If we decide to go to bed after listening, you know, blasting in volume, heavy house, electronic music, it's going to be difficult for that superior emotional center to be active. Because in the meanwhile, all of those inferior aspects of us are going to be dancing to the rhythm of those heavy basses. And that's not going to help us. So a good thing to do at night, so that we can transition slowly into that most elevated way of thinking, which is not thinking, is to listen to classical music. If you would play some Beethoven, now that we have so many Alexas and so many Echoes and so many other devices like the Roku sticks and the Apple TVs and all of these other things, we can always set them so that they are playing this music for us in the background. Even if what we have is old technology, where we have an old CD with great compositions from Mozart, Bach, Beethoven, Liszt, Richard Wagner, we can just allow it to play and repeat throughout the night. And when that music is playing, because that music is music of the spheres condensed in this three-dimensional realm, it becomes a beautiful source of nourishment for the superior emotional center. And the stronger that superior emotional center is developed, the stronger is the expression of the consciousness itself. Very well. So let's keep talking here. Look at that. The next one that we have here, it says the bedroom. The bedroom is very important because we cannot take the bedroom just for granted. You see, it is in the bedroom where we would like to practice this ritual of dream yoga, of the reunion through the exercise of dreaming. And that means that the bedroom needs to be in some kind of order. We cannot afford to have a bedroom if we have pets, and the pets have been doing their business in the carpet, and we have residues of that business in the carpet, and we have dirty clothes there, and we have dust here, and old cups of coffee and tea with dried residues in there, and an old plate with stuff. You know, that invites focal points just for larvae to come in and feed itself out of that stuff. We don't need that. Our room should be clean. Not because we want to get into the argument of the battle of the opposites and clean and dirty. No, we don't want to get into that. This is just basic logic of sanitation. And when the room is clean, the air is clean. When the room is fresh, the body sleeps better. When the room is not decorated with images of skulls devouring corpses and people being beheaded and images that are lustful. See, when we eliminate all of those sources of those inferior vibrations and we replace them, beautiful images. A beautiful image of the goddess Shakti. A beautiful image of Shiva, the representation of the Holy Spirit in the Hindu pantheon. When we have a beautiful image of Cybeles, when we have beautiful pictures of landscapes, when we have a statuette replicating the work of Michelangelo, David, all of that beauty vibrates within the room. And of course, it has an effect in the psyche that is very useful. So why would we be inundating ourselves with inferior vibrations of animal passions and lust and death and destruction when we could infuse constructive vibrations into the exercise? Well, that is what we want in the bedroom. And if you can perfume your bedroom, even better. You can perfume your bedroom with frankincense, with the aroma of roses, with heliotrope. These are all beautiful aromas that go straight into the soul. When your bed sheets are clean and crisp, that allows for a phenomenal dream experience. We don't want to be sleeping in bed sheets that are turning yellow because they have been so long in the bed that there's so much skin dander and oils, and we don't want that. We have to keep that bed clean. But the mattress is also important. Because if we are in a bed and the mattress is hard like a rock, well, that does not allow the body to rest well. And if the mattress is so old that every time you sit on it, you end up all contorted and you wake up in the morning with pain here and pain there, then that is also an inconvenience. See, the mattress should not be too hard, should not be too soft either. And in the same light, that bed, if you are laying down on your bed and every time that you move, you can hear the spring screeching or the bed is cracking, every time that you move at night, you will wake up the body. Every time you wake up the body, there is an eruption in the sleep. Every time that you wake up the body, that lunar soul, a lunar astral body, is going to come back into it. And then it's going to go back out. So let's not create those interruptions. If you can, lubricate those points of connection, all those metal joints. That way they don't make the sound. If you can adjust it, by all means adjust it. But try to look for a way in which the bed is quiet, comfortable, firm, and clean. Now imagine that you have this type of room. It is a room that is decorated with things that are aesthetically pleasing, that are vibrating harmoniously with the beauty of creation. That's awesome. The aroma is inviting. The bed is comfortable, firm. You are setting the perfect causes and conditions for the best possible dream yoga experience. So now that you have done that, let's allow ourselves to continue elaborating in this mental experiment. Because as you do this, then consider for a moment that you can align your bed, not for aesthetics, not because you want your room to be magazine worthy, but you would be aligning your bed not for aesthetics, but for functionality. And what that means is that you can set the bed in such a way that when you go to sleep, that your head can naturally be aligned towards the magnetic north. That is an awesome thing to do. Because just like the humble compass always aligns itself, you would be aligning your body just like that. And then all of those forces will flow with you, not through you as if you were orthogonal. And the nice thing about you aligning yourself in parallel with those forces is that at the time of unfolding, unfolding becomes a lot easier. We have spoken about the bedroom, the mattress, we have spoken about music, and we have spoken about aligning the body. Notice that we have not done anything yet with our machine other than feeding it right and taking a brisk walk. So one other thing that we can do is that at the time of going to sleep, set yourself comfortably on the bed. Make the habit of always elevating a thank you to the innermost, of always reaching out to your real being and expressing gratitude and gratefulness for the experiences of the day. Ideally, you would follow this not only with an exercise of relaxation of the body, but you would follow this with a conscious exercise of retrospection. Because the exercise of retrospection allows you, of course, to revisit all of the events of the day. And as you do this, retrospection always indicates a special event. There is always one or two events, maybe three, in the day that will stick out like sore thumbs. Those are events in which you can see how you were reacting, how your thoughts were affected, how your habits all of a sudden got thrown out of whack. All of a sudden you were tense when you weren't before. And all of these moments are important because they allow you to see clearly that there is an aggregate or a group of aggregates, because they always work together based on their transactions and their structure, that are worth identifying, comprehending, so that you can invoke the power of Kundalini to eliminate them. So assuming that this is something that is already part of your standard practice, at the time that you are ready to go to sleep, you can position yourself in the posture of the lion. And this is a really comfortable posture. If you sleep on your stomach, your chiropractor will tell you that's bad. Don't do that. You're putting undue stress on your diaphragm and thus on your respiratory system. If you sleep on your back, your doctor may be saying that is comfortable posture, but don't do that. It will invite you to snore. That becomes a distraction. And out of a courtesy, we shouldn't do that to our spouse. The lion posture invites you to rest on your right side. And this is such a comfortable posture. Because what you will do is that you will turn on your right side and you will bring your knees towards your chest, but only high enough to the point that it is comfortable. Once you are on your right-hand side and you have raised your knees closer to your chest, again, to whatever is comfortable, you bring your right hand and you allow your face to rest in the palm of your right hand. Some people say, can you have the pillow between your hand and your face? Yes, you can do that. You can just bring your right hand and you can rest on your side and your left hand, you can allow it to rest comfortably over your left hip. Once you are in this posture, there is something interesting about it. Because your body relaxes quickly, and yet the body seems to relax faster than what you would be able to lose your span of attention to be watchful of what is actually happening. And this is a great thing, because as you start doing this exercise over and over again, what you will come to see is that every night there is a particular image that shows up in the screen of the mind, and it is an indication that you have reached that perfect spot between being awake and being asleep. You know, you are right there on that fence line. And that moment, it's very important that you recognize it. It is critical that you can distinguish what that image is from all of the other images that you may see. Because that image is known as the initiating element. And every time that you see that, that is the moment in which you can do one of two things. You can either choose to stay there and start observing your dream unfolding, or you at that moment can choose to stand up. And the moment that you stand up, because you have been watchful, your body is comfortably resting, the moment that you stand up, you effectively leave your body on the bed and you have unfolded consciously in your astral body. Many people, when they do this the first time, they see themselves and they can't believe it, and the excitement is so much that they awaken the body. So when the body awakens, it pulls back the astral body through that thread of Antakarana. So don't get excited. There's no need. Be grateful. Express your gratitude, your satisfaction. That is a natural thing. Leave the excitement for later. The excitement comes from the many different aggregates that we have. So stand up, and at that moment, you can invoke of your Divine Mother and ask of your Divine Mother to take you to a place where you could learn from the lips of the Masters. Or you could ask your Divine Mother to take you anywhere else you want. Some students have tried, and they have said, Divine Mother, take me to where you know I deserve to be. We would advise you from going in that direction. But you're welcome to try it. Okay, so this is the lion posture. You rest on your right-hand side. Rest your face on the palm of your right hand. Your left hand on your left hip. You bring your knees closer to your chest, to whatever feels comfortable for you. It is a phenomenal way to sleep. And once you have assumed that posture, invoke of your innermost. And to invoke the innermost, we don't have to get to We don't have to get too creative. You know, we don't have to be fancy. We don't have to be impressive or mystical. All that is necessary to invoke the innermost is that you do it with love. That you speak directly from that temple of your heart. You can say, Divine Father, Father of mine, I'm here humbly at your presence to give you thanks for this day. Thank you for all of these opportunities. You can ask for help. And on the help that you can ask for either one or two things. You can say, Divine Father, we ask of you, with our soul and our heart, that you bring forth Morpheus, the God of dreams. Because our innermost is a multiple perfect unity. There are 49 distinct parts of our being. We cover those in another lecture. But one of those many parts of the being is called Morpheus. And as the God of dreams, Morpheus can educate you on dream yoga. It can educate you on the meaning of the symbols that you will be encountering. It can educate you on how to maintain your consciousness at a heightened state during the dream exercise so that you can slowly, methodically start awakening consciousness in the astral plane. Say, Morpheus, 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 God of dreams, I invoke you. Come, come, come. And then you can ask Morpheus for the help that you need. If you have questions, I have been seeing this in my dreams. What does this mean? My dream, it seems to be so chaotic. Help me understand it. It will. The other aspect of our being that you can invoke is called the Maiden of Our Memories. And the Maiden of Our Memories allows us to bring back all of those oneric experiences into the mind so that we can perceive them when the physical body awakens. You can always ask of your being, Divine Father, we ask of you that you bring about the Divine Maiden of Memories. Can say, Maiden of Memories, Maiden of Memories, we invoke you. Come, come, come. Say, help us protecting our memories, making them vivid, realistic, detailed at the time that we wake up, so that we may extract as much wisdom out of this particular experience. That's what you do. And the moment that you do all that, you will naturally drift into the sleep state until the next morning. We recommend that if you still don't have one, that you get yourself a Gnostic journal. Gnostic journal is super useful because what you do is that you keep that Gnostic journal in bed. Make sure that you have a good pencil. Try not to have a felt-tip marker or any type of liquid ink kind of device, just so that if there's an accident because of our own indiscretions, that the bed does not get ruined or the sheets. So a pencil will work very well. And keep your pencil and your Gnostic journal next to you so that when you wake up in the morning, number one, in that moment that you wake up and before you open your eyes, start your retrospective exercise. Because at that moment, the memories are still very vivid. You know, everybody has the experience of waking up in the morning, having perfect clarity of everything that happened in their dream, and the moment that they move and sit on the bed, memories are gone. Just like that. You shake the astral body as it's coming back into the body itself, memories dissipate. We cannot afford to be losing those memories. So stay very still. And in that moment, from awakening and before opening your eyes, you have a very small time window. Just watch it and initiate your exercise retrospection. And just as you did before going to bed, you do it once again before you get out of bed. Revisit everything that you remember from your dream. It does not matter if it makes sense or not. Even if it's just one mental image frame, even if that's all you've got, make sure that you get out of it as much as possible. And once you have that, gently reach for your journal and write every detail down. Now, as part of the ritual, every month Go back over your dreams. Start looking for similarities in what is happening. There are dreams that repeat themselves over and over again. You know this. Look at the symbols. Look at what is happening in the dreams. Look at what your emotions were at the times that things were happening. Because we have four basic laws that are used to interpret dreams. We use the law of correspondence, it's the principle of correspondence. That is that hermetic principle that tells us, as above, so below. We have the law of philosophical analogies. We have the law of opposites, and we have the law of number. So just as we have shared in other lectures, if, for example, you see yourself in a dream, and you see yourself being chased by a lion, that is an important detail that needs to go in your Gnostic journal. Based on the law of philosophical analogies, the lion is a representation of the law. The archons of karma, the lion of the law. If the lion is aggressive with you, then that gives you an indication that you need to revisit what is happening in your life, how you're behaving, because sometimes we forget about ourselves and we behave in ways that are less than honorable. So we have to make a correction. Maybe the lion comes around and it's perfectly tame. Maybe the lion allows you to pet it. That is important. That means that the law is watching. That also means that your behavior seems to be in light with what is truly honorable. Now, for example, you may see yourself being followed by the police. If you see yourself being followed by the police and arrested, that means that the archons of karma, the law as well, is watching. It means that we have to revisit how our behavior is being. And when we see the police, well, in this case, we can apply the principle of correspondence. Because just like here, the police is a symbol of the law. Well, up there, it is an indication that those are the archons of the law doing their job. If you see yourself in a dream receiving some information from a teacher, one of your teachers in elementary school, or a teacher that was very meaningful in your life, the principal correspondence will give you an indication that that could be a teaching that you are receiving from the great brotherhood. They are offering you a teaching. And then the context of the teaching is worth extracting those details to see what that was. So you see here the principal correspondence. You see here the philosophical analogies. If you see yourself in a car driving, the car is always a symbol of the physical body. So based on the law of philosophical analogies, the car or house is a symbol of the body. If you're driving it and all of a sudden the car breaks down and that is a dream that has been repeating itself, you need to be careful. You better get yourself checked because it may indicate that your body may be getting sick or that something may be going on with your body that you have not noticed. So it's worth checking. Then there is the law of opposites. If you see yourself in a dream celebrating, if you see yourself in a dream dancing, laughing, that is an indication that that day or in the upcoming days, there will be moments that situations will become very sour. If you see yourself eating sweets or eating cakes, that is an indication that there are some sour moments and circumstances that are just coming. It's giving you ample warning so that you can be observant of your behavior. Because simply by watching your behavior and stealing that fire from that defect, rather than reacting with our anger or the stuff that we do, when we steal that fire from our defects, we could avoid those circumstances. So those are good warnings. And the last one, it's the law of number. All numbers based on numerology, they need to be synthesized to one digit. So if you happen to be in your dream and something tells you that the price of something is $4.99, Well, we have to add 4 and 9 and 9. And that would be 22, which equals 4. Did I do the math right? 18 and 4, 22. Yes. So we have to add that all together, and that will add up to a number 4. And the number 4 is always a symbol of the innermost. If it adds up to 5, that means that it has to do something with karma, action, law, conflict, war, internal revolution. If it is a number 6, it's an indication that we have to look at temptations. We need to define ourselves. We need to be watchful of our environment so that we don't take our feet into the slippery slopes, because falling is always a problem. If it is a number 7, number 7 is always telling us that there is triumph, provided that you invest the right willpower. So it's saying here you can be triumphant, but it's going to come at a cost. You have to invest of your effort, your tenacity, your dedication. There's a number 8. The number 8 will invite you to have patience. It will tell you that you will go through difficult tests, harsh moments, and you need to be composed and you need to be calm before them. And the number 9 is always a number of initiation. It is a number that speaks of solitude. It says that you have to guide yourself by the light of the innermost. That is what those numbers are saying. And because we started at 4, if that addition results in a 3, the 3 is always allegoric to the Holy Spirit. And the Holy Spirit is the force of creation. That we know that it's perfect, it's harmonious, it's beautiful. So that's how our actions, our thoughts, our sentiments need to be. They have to be aesthetically pleasing. They have to be expressed in all beauty. If it is a 2, the 2 always speaks about matrimony, associating ideas. It may be giving us an indication that we cannot just continue to be stubborn. We have to bring in flexibility into the mind, or that our mind needs to become more agile to deal with the circumstances. And if it adds up to a number 1, well, the number 1 is always inviting us to originate ideas, to be original in what we do, to break away from the gregarious conduct, from dressing like everybody else dresses, from speaking like everyone else speaks. Because the number 1 is always the number of the Father. So these are the 4 laws: correspondences, philosophical analogies, the law of opposites, and the law of number. And if you would like to learn more of this, we encourage you to visit our page. There's a 3-part course that is free of charge for everybody. You can just download it, you can study it, and it becomes a really good guide so that you can do your own dream interpretation. So to close on this topic of tantric dream yoga, don't share your dreams. Your dreams are your own individual and particular experiences. Don't ask anybody to be interpreting the dreams for you. What may be a symbol for you may be a completely different symbol to someone else. Rain is a good example of this, because rain, it looks like tears. So whenever it's raining in a dream, it indicates that there will be some crying later. But if you happen to be a farmer and your life revolves around working with the land and being involved with nature, if you ask somebody to interpret the dream and there's a rain, they may tell you that you're going to suffer, when in reality, that symbol for you may mean that prosperous circumstances are upcoming, that moments of joy are approaching you. Because rain is always a blessing. When we are irrigating our earth and seeking just the development of those seeds that exist in there for those virtues. So don't ask anybody to interpret your dreams. Learn how to do it. And the more you do it, and the more you can learn to think, inquiring, questioning, analyzing, and reflecting, you will then start tuning your ability to apply those definitions, and you will become an expert at it. So this is our practice for today. Just wanted to share with you these little pointers so that you can start using them tonight. So if there were any questions, you're welcome to post them on the screen. questions. So with no questions, dear friends, thank you so much for joining us in our Gnostic Lab of this Thursday. And nothing left for us but to wish you a phenomenal weekend, and may all beings be happy. To everybody, have a good night.